The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect the views of CKLN Radio Incorporated. The following program contains views which some might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
They would be happy to put a warning on an album that said explicit lyrics, parental guidance.
Let me ask you this. If we have categories and labels and rating systems for movies, why are you opposed to a similar rating system for records?
Well, if a person is hired as an actor for a film, whatever they rate the film doesn't hurt the actor as a person. He is a hired hand and he's pretending. If a person makes an album and he's written the song or he's performing the song and his name is on the album and his picture is on the album, if you rate the album, you're rating the person and you apply a stigma to that individual, and that's not fair.
As a regular radio listener, I feel I must protest most strongly as often as possible. Yours sincerely, Brigadier General Titfield Thunderbolt, MC, GPO, PVC, DSO, and Looney.
And here on the sucky shores of Canada, we find our heroes...
Boy, what a terrible place.
Only too true, Canada is the wettest, soggiest, dreariest place on earth.
You forgot useless.
Useless, too. Situated directly between the United States and Musselvania, Canada has the distinction of being constantly fought over by both countries. The U.S. insists it's part of Musselvania, and Musselvania insists it's part of the U.S.
But why do we come here on our vacation?
Because after 2 weeks, any place else in the world seems like heaven.
I don't think they're that cynical or devious, Michael. This is too risky. We just announced the deal, and I frankly have been focused elsewhere, like on gasoline prices and, you know, my trip to Africa, and haven't seen the fundraising strategy yet. And so the answer to your question, really, I can't answer your question.
Where does the people's right to know this fit into all of that?
We're weighing, taking a look, taking consideration, giving up serious consideration. Nice try, though.
Willie the Pimp. Frank Zappa. Okay, take it away, Frank.
I'm a little pimp with my hair gas mask. Have any pants with my shoes shine black. Got a little lady walk that street, telling all the boys it's a great deal. $20 bill, I can fix you straight.
We're depressing, eh? I like to do these things to depress us.
Every hour on the hour, Ryerson Radio checks the weather.
Yet another uncued cut. Oh, dear. So, you heard from Frank Zappa just now. Frank Zappa's got a movie on at the moment, 200 Motels, playing in the Uptown Cinema. And it was reviewed in The Sun. A gentleman by the name of George Anthony went down to see it. This is what George Anthony says about 200 Motels. Half an hour of this pretentious, pseudo-surrealistic drivel is 20 minutes too much, and 90 minutes is unbearable. The only sensible way to enjoy the pedestrian optical gimmickry would be to be high on grass before viewing it. Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah!
How the Royal Philharmonic got involved in such trite, mediocre music is a question to ponder, but they, too, get stuck in it. Too, whatever he means by that. He goes on to say, watching the mothers as they toss rude little words around with unconcealed glee is not my idea of a high time. Oh, Mr. Anthony, really. Waiting for the LSD Newmont is not much better. This guy's really funny.
I know!
Because the camera techniques at the best are only a clumsy theft from television control rooms. Well, clumsy theft or not from television control rooms, Zappa really put some new techniques down on the screen. Anyway.
Finally.
Walking down the street the other day, Peter the Panhandler met Sammy the Businessman. And this is what Peter the Panhandler said to Sammy the Businessman. Something like this.
Mister, maybe you can spare a dime.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Optical gimmick trick.
We have an exciting announcement.
Hitler was entirely a radio man.
I know.
The buffoon Stephen Harper in Canada.
Organic.
Organic Robotoids.
In what respect, Charlie?
But then, one Robotoid is as good as another.
Well, here's your Robotoid host. Back again for another week. Thank you, women. Enjoy this contribution every week. I'm Greg Duffel. The show is called The International Connection. I'm here every Sunday between 8:30 and 10:30.
Can those communists throw a show? The party of Stalin is going to be an outright lampshade on the head affair.
Oh, yeah. It's always fun when you get communists together. Some people hate them, you know. Some people that shall remain nameless. Let's just say I'm surrounded.
I should give you the show. Greg should get the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jim. Booyah to you, Jim. Big Toronto, cold, freezing, booyah. Well, it's not too original, but...
Let's go to Greg. Speak to me, Greg.
Okay. All right, Jim. Okay. Here we go. Show's on the road. All right. Welcome, everybody, to the International Connection for another Sunday. Nice to be with you. Hope that the feeling's mutual. Well, this week's been a difficult week. Some of the people I've been deluged with letters, really, with emails, and usually, if things are going along okay, if there's nothing really too upsetting out there to the audience. And sometimes even if there is tremendous upset, I don't receive any emails, but there is a threshold that's been reached. And, I didn't realize it. I just had no idea that the audience was feeling this way. And of course, the biggest controversy that's occurred on this program over the many, many, many years of broadcasting has been, Bob, it turns out. Bob, as you know, Bob has been phoning in from Hawaii, Hikiki, from Maui, from his wonderful, perfect area of the world that he's in, the sun, the sand, the palm trees, the water. He's been phoning in from paradise. And I guess people have just been a bit annoyed by this, that first of all, we're here in a deep freeze, and there he is for some inexplicable reason. Bob is enjoying what appears to be a fantastic lifestyle. And frankly, if I didn't get his phone number and have actually phoned him there, I would have thought maybe he's lying, that he's really phoning in from some other location. But he really is phoning in from Hawaii. So now, Bob, as you know, goes back a long way here at CKLN. So it's troubling to me to think that times have changed so much, because that Bob would be so reviled by the audience or so disliked. And because I enjoyed Bob when he was on the air years and years ago. And, well, let me give you a little sampling here of just what was said. Some people are, you know, are kind. They just are naturally kind. They've said that they found Bob Dobbs informative and very interesting, especially when you guys talk about the history of CKLN. This is from someone inside CKLN. That person shall remain nameless, again, for fear of retribution, but just said, keep up the good work. But there have been so many emails that have been just at their wits' end, really, with Bob. They just can't take it any longer. So, well, I feel that I have to make a difficult decision. It's one I haven't wanted to do. Some people have been saying that I owe this person something, that's why he's on the air, that it's some kind of nepotism or cronyism that I'm involved in here with Bob. And I don't like those kind of accusations. I would never have anybody on just because it would benefit me personally. I thought that Bob would be an interesting addition to the program, and it just turns out that he hasn't been. So I guess what I'm going to do, this really hurts me and pains me, I guess I'm just going to have to say goodbye to Bob. He won't be phoning in today. He won't be on the air. For those of you that dislike him, he won't ever be on again, and because he's just obviously so upsetting to so many people. So we'll just get on with
Greg, Greg. Who do you think you are, Greg?
Bob?
Greg.
Okay, Greg, now I know. Now I know what's going on. I received a memo this week. I'm looking over the phones, and I don't see any lights lit up. So I'm figuring, how the heck is this happening? I received a memo earlier this week that said that you couldn't unplug any of the CKLN equipment. And now I realize why. If I even figured out where Bob is coming through on this system, I couldn't unplug it. Now I know who is secretly running things. It's you, Bob. You
yes.
are running things.
You're a fast learner, Greg. As soon as you heard those syllables, Greg, you immediately looked for a technical reason, and was the cause of this.
I looked to get you off the air. I looked to hit the button, the drop button, immediately. Bob,
yeah, then what are you going to do? You just explained I'm gone and I'm here. What? Well, that's embarrassing for you, Greg.
Well, it's incredibly embarrassing to me. It's incredibly embarrassing to my audience, who think I have complete and utter authority over this program, that I'm the captain of this ship every Sunday, that what I
you're
say goes.
Station. You're the fake station manager. That's what people think.
Who are you then? If you're allowed to come through just as you will, cut in, hack in to this system, it would appear, but I guess you're being allowed to do this. I guess you have a secret agreement.
Not only is the email you got this week mm-hmm. and not to unplug anything a clue, but also remember a few months ago there were rumors that there was some kind of remote interference of CKLN, of people's shows.
Oh, yeah.
CKLN really does mean Secret Council 10. CKLS, CKLS 10, you see? So there's something special about CKLN. I mean, how did I become chairperson of the Secret Council 10 in February 88 through CKLN? Why on CKLN? Well, it's always been an outpost since 1984 when I put Bob Marshall on the air there of the operations known more popularly as Echelon. Remember the movie The Enemy of the State, 1998 approximately? Gene Hackman explaining the solar government and surveillance of everything since the 70s.
Was that starring Big Willie Starr? Will Smith?
Yes. Mm-hmm. He played somebody called Bob Dean as a lawyer. Black Bob Dean. But the thing is that CKLN is unique. I mean, why does it stay on the air? Well, it has had a lot of problems financially, whatever, for decades, and it's still there. Well, it gets secret funding, but that funding comes with a price, and that's a little bit of control by me. And, Greg, we're in a serious time. Canada has just gone into martial law conditions. You've heard of that, I hope.
Yes, yes, I heard about that.
Matter of fact, that very clip you're playing, 1971, that person, that DJ,
yeah,
was one of the reasons that attracted my attention to this station almost 40 years ago because of the kind of programming it had. Excellent programming. There was no one else playing Zappa back then.
Did you enjoy that clip, Bob?
Yes, I remember it. I have a pretty good memory, pretty good acoustic memory. I remember a lot. If you play something, I can pinpoint it. I know that broadcast, that was broadcast about 9 o'clock on a Wednesday evening in 1971.
Hmm.
Probably in November, 71.
Is that Captain Beefheart?
Yes, yes, it's Don Van Vliet, who I've known since 1958. Standing on the porch of the Lido Hotel, cruising in the lobby, love the
way I feel. Well, Bob, it's disturbing that you're here with me, but I guess I have no choice.
Well, Greg, I'm willing to let you feel that you're the captain of the show here, and you are.
Yes.
You've done 8 years yeoman service, and I'm just here to monitor these tough times that are happening.
All right. Okay, we'll just have to put up with you. But I feel it fair to read you some of the things that people have said. May I?
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Someone writes, obviously in absolute despair, I can't do it. That your contribution, it seems, is permanent, a permanent fixture now, and I can't listen anymore. I must say that I'm a relatively new listener, at least a new regular listener. Some years ago, I would tune into CKLN on a Sunday morning on my way to work and hear a curious, monotonous, vague sort of conspiracy theory political commentary, which I would listen to for a minute because it was different, and then tune away from because it was boring. I heard the phrases Church of the Subgenius and International Connection and came to associate them with a fringy, though possibly interesting, listening alternative. I forgot why I stopped listening for a while, maybe a year or so, and usually tuned in, wait for it, CBC Radio with Michael Enright. Probably just because it wasn't so tedious. Well, every now and then, I would see what was on CKLN, since it and CIUT had some interesting stuff sometimes. And in the last year or so, I became hooked on your show. The international connection had undeniably changed. The chemistry was undeniable. The sound bites interspersed with your dialogue were often hilarious. And you guys were eclectic and electric, offering humorous commentary on the most politically but not necessarily so topics of the week. I was addicted. I even found myself wondering why these two guys were volunteering on a community radio and not being snapped up by a bigger station and being paid real money.
Oh, come on.
Hey, Bob. They had an actual good show that had become the highlight of my radio listening week. I became interested. I started to send emails even. That's not like me. Then Bob Dobbs came. The vacuum was filled by Bob Dobbs. I don't know if you think you owe this person some sort of debt from the past. Well, I'll deny it, all right, Bob? Can I just get away with denying that I owe you a debt from the past?
No problem, Greg. It's not your problem that I'm here. I'm here for other reasons.
Whether you actually like him, whether you really don't like him, and no, we won't either, and that therefore it will make for interesting radio, or if he has somehow cajoled his way into a permanent spot on the show. Well, obviously, he has cajoled himself in, because I can't unplug any equipment here. But I am compelled to do the only thing the casual but loyal listener has the power to do if he wants to try to change your mind. Tune out.
Oh, no, no, please.
Yesterday morning was the last straw. And they go on to, it's punishing. I can't even read it. It's he says he doesn't want to even think about whether Mr. Ray was being oral or linear or Bolshevik or anything. And he tuned over. He says that you mutter neo-McLuhan-esque musings on the current financial crisis, And then he couldn't take it.
Wait a minute, Greg. Yeah. Someone, my team has just sent me the letter. Okay.
Yes.
He says here, he says, I couldn't take it and tuned to CBC to hear an interview with Bob Rae.
Yeah,
I talk a lot about Rae, on the possible new coalition government Canada. I had traded up. At least now I was getting something real. Now, didn't he say earlier he was happy about something hilarious?
How did you get this email?
No, don't worry about it, Greg.
All right.
You're being hacked, Greg. Everything you do there.
God, damn it.
Station.
Damn it.
I didn't even think about whether Mr. Rae was being oral or linear or Bolshevik. He capitalizes him. Or anything. Not one inside joke. Oh, so he thinks that we are presenting inside jokes about the workings of CKLM.
I never thought that.
No way. No inane cackling or sucking up to the host by saying he was God's gift to radio. I've never said that about you.
No, Bob. No, definitely. You've definitely never said you never actually give me much praise. Only off the air do you give me any praise whatsoever. And it's nothing to do with what I do on the radio. Hold on, Bob. We have a telephone intervention, and you're on the air.
Good morning, Greg.
Andy.
Good morning, Bob Dobbs.
Good morning, Andy.
Just listening to this feedback from, the overwhelmingly decided against the voice of Bob Dobbs. I just want to speak on Bob. Bob did a great portion of the show last week when you took a hiatus for 20 minutes, and
yes.
I want to thank Bob for that. That was excellent radio, Bob, 21 minutes of monologue. You know, Bob, I was in a similar situation that you're in right now, going back about 18 months or 2 years ago, when callers were getting after Greg and Daniel that Andy was calling the show far too much. And
I remember
had
Andy.
To go or we would choose to change the channel. So I've been where you are, Bobs. And like I say, stick with the program. This storm will blow over. It blew over with me. I was a multiple-time caller. I have gone into therapy, and I have cut back on my obsessive-compulsive disorder of calling the station far too frequently. I do admit I did have a problem, but I did cut back. So I was in the same situation. I think Greg put it one time, Andy, you were an interesting personality because at the same week, you were put in the number one as the most listened-to person and also the most hated person. You ran the number one position in both columns. Most listened, most enjoyed, and most hated.
Now, Andy, I don't know whether you heard the opening,
yes,
but
did
you hear that section where it said Ryerson weather on the hour on Ryerson Radio? Did you hear that?
No, I missed that one.
You missed that. Hold on. I do want to play that for you because I thought I'd excerpted it, but let me see here. Let me see if I can find it. Let's see.
We have an exciting announcement.
Yeah,
the announcement
the...
you've been waiting for.
That is baloney. That is baloney.
That's baloney.
Oh, hold on. That's not it. That's what you'll hear later. Here it is.
They would be happy to put a
that's our opening.
On an album that said explicit lyrics.
A tree would be to be high on grass. Frank Zappa's got a movie on at the moment to do these things into presses.
Here it is, Andy.
Every hour on the hour, Ryerson Radio checks the weather.
Hear that, Andy?
Yes, I do. And that takes me back to my weather days when I did the weather off the balcony here for Ryerson University Monday through Friday.
Well, that I pulled that from a 1971 broadcast from this campus and that I happen to have. And I just thought it's just perfect for you.
Absolutely. So there was a meteorologist years ago at Ryerson?
Yes. Actually, it was Reynolds Wolf.
I see.
Yeah. He's now at CNN.
Did he, get up on the roof and do weather for you?
Harold Hussein was his assistant at the time.
Oh, yeah, Harold Hussein. There's a voice from the past.
Mm-hmm. They had a full team of meteorologists at the closed circuit Ryerson Radio of 1971.
You know, I'm tempted to start up a balcony-based broadcasting weather reports again like I did Monday to Friday for this station. But nobody wants to pick up the phone in the morning. There's
no, I have a feeling.
Down there.
Yeah, I have a feeling nobody's here in
the
morning.
I believe so.
I think it's been completely wiped.
Unlike in the basement in the old days, in the green room.
Oh, yeah. That was fully occupied all the time.
Oh,
everybody was a hive of activity.
Absolutely. But, Bob,
well,
when did
you
get guns there? Like I said, I've been
How
where you are. There's a contingent right now that don't want to hear any more Bob Dobbs.
Yeah.
There was a contingent who didn't want to hear any more Andy.
No, I remember, Andy, that there was one of the programmers, and again, that programmer shall remain nameless.
Sure.
They felt it was bringing the prestige of the station down, that
The luster? You're talking about the luster?
Yeah, that you were doing that. That you, I mean, it's been said about this program on innumerable occasions, but about your contributions in particular, that because you were doing a weather report or a traffic report on your balcony.
Yes, 21 floors up.
Because you didn't have a helicopter or because you weren't driving around yourself, that because you weren't doing it in that manner as we're used to in the mainstream media.
Yeah.
That
but
somehow,
I was very low budget, you know. I could only afford these sliding doors 21 floors up.
But somehow this was perceived as bringing the station down a notch.
Yeah.
And I thought it was...
I disagree with that comment because I think it's innovative. It's cutting edge. It's outside the box.
Well, I thought so too.
And you have an individual who volunteers his time. When I did it 2 years ago, and I was doing it every morning, and for me to say that, them to say the luster and the shine and the polish is gone from the station.
I know. I think that they really do need to go to some kind of I think they need to go to a re-education camp almost immediately.
I'll hang up and continue to listen to
Bob. Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you, Andy, for that.
I'm also encouraging all the Daves to get together. You know, I looked up, you know what a collection of Daves is? I looked up, because you know there's like a pride of lions or a flock of geese?
Yes.
So I looked up a collection of Daves, and it's a Davette.
Oh.
Yeah, a group of Daves is a Davette. So I know there's a Davette out there in the city, and I'm encouraging them all to listen and call in when they feel it's necessary.
They're all huddled together there in a
trying
cave.
Trying to stay away from this Arctic cold that's overcaptured this city.
It is very cold.
It is cold.
Yeah.
How long has Andy been listening to CKLN?
How long I've been listening?
Yes.
Oh, I would think maybe 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah, I remember Andy, one of the first times I really was aware of Andy was when I did a broadcast here. I believe it was on Christmas Day.
Yep.
And... I guess I was going for 3 or 4 hours. Nobody wanted to come in and do it, and I did. And because I don't really celebrate that time.
No.
And as you all know.
Absolutely, for obvious reasons.
Yes. And Andy phoned in and gave, I didn't put him on the air, I don't think. But
no.
I spoke to him, and he told me that he and Annie were listening. I think they might have been driving somewhere, perhaps, at some point.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was very encouraging to know that someone was out there and actually reacting. So
sure.
I think Andy's been a very encouraging person to us broadcasters here at CKLN, knowing that somebody is out there listening and taking some interest, and also that he is, as Andy said, he's volunteering his time, and I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you again. Listen, I'll continue to listen here.
Thank you.
And, Bob, keep up the good work, and like I said, I've been where you are. Keep the naysayers away from the door.
All right, Andy. Thank you. Oh, gosh. People encouraging Bob. It's terrible. Anyway, sorry, Bob. Back to you. Are you there? Are you there?
Thanks to Andy.
Yes.
It's nice to his sentiments, but it has nothing to do with why I'm here. I don't represent any anthropomorphic community. I represent a different kind of community. And actually, over time, any of the hosts of CKLN had that problem. Like yourself, you're not sure what community you represent because you're actually there for me, which is another level of a community.
Mm.
It's a community that are represented by novels like Brave New World, Orwell's 1984. The community of people that implement those kind of operations is what I'm safe housing here at CKLN.
What's interesting is some software has kicked in here.
Oh. Time to shut you down, Bob.
Oh, did you hear that?
Now, where would that come from?
I don't know. I think it's just automatically come up here. Something wants to shut you down.
That's the Android meme. See, now we're getting...
You had your chance to join me, Bob. But now I'm going to infect the supercomputer and return to crash mainframe.
Oh, you're causing problems with the computer. Even the computer is saying, we have to shut Bob down.
Look, Greg, look, that's the Android meme, one of my constant themes. I mean, it is a living entity, and through my interaction on this station, I can affect the Android meme.
Mm.
Movies come out to defeat this process, like Enemy of the State, but in the end, I'm still here.
All right, Bob. Seeing as you're here, why don't we just get on with the program? And here, I'm going to put out a few prompts to our audience, like this one.
Call now, within the next 20 minutes, because we can't do this all day.
Yeah, we can't do this all day, and here's the number.
My job is to entertain, to educate, and boy, it's hard to do on days like today. But call me. Call 416-595-1655. That's 416-595-1655 today.
Yeah. Call now.
Right, call now. 416-595-1655. I'm sure you'll have nothing to say, but it'll be nice to hear from you. There were other letters. I just want to say that Michael says that that the show is lacking too much Bob for his personal taste, but he'll keep listening. He'll suffer through it. And someone
That'd
else salutes Bob for his heroic and now proven ability to hold the ship on course last Sunday while the captain went to get the supplies that weren't needed. For this, I have high praise for Bob, but the guy bores me stiff. So
well, look at the criticism. They say I'm a Marshall McLuhan schizophrenic homeless nephew muttering pet theories to any passerby that listens. That isn't his bag. The thing is, that sounds like Church of Subgenius stuff. That criticism goes on and all dot slack. It's been going on for 15 years. I think this person who wrote this letter wrote, researched. He wasn't sure. He contradicts himself. He likes Bob Ray, but he likes you guys. He likes you when you make fun of the Mumbai shootings, but then he needs real stuff. There's so many contradictions in this letter. And I think he didn't know much about me, and he went and relied on the cliches from the Church of Subgenius, which will get you nowhere.
Yeah, we've got Pellegrino on the Comrades Community chat portal this morning. Do you see that, Bob?
Yes, I'm looking at it. Yes. Where are you from?
Yeah. No, I'm writing to them. That's me. That's me writing to Pellegrino.
This is going to be like last week. That's how he's on the radio.
Yeah. You inform them, Bob, while I'm doing...
Oh, well, listen to this.
Well, that's a Disney announcer, and last week I received something from one of my former staff here at the station. Person has been no longer with the station, was removed. And they sent me an email, and it was a quote of the day. Now, last week encompassed December 5th, and... that was the birthday of Walt Disney. Now, I'll go to... Well, somebody tried to phone in. Didn't get them. Walt Disney was born in, I believe, 1901, December 5th. And so he'd be quite elderly now. But he died in 1966 of cancer. And Disney has, in addition to being a great... filmmaker or film producer, writer and creator, he's often maligned by the left. I know that because of my involvement here at the station, that many people on the left really hate Disney or are suspicious of Disney, accuse him of being a Nazi, and so on and so forth, which I've never seen any evidence of this. That doesn't seem to make any difference to some people on the left to actually bring evidence to a situation. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Greg. It's Dave.
Hey, Dave. Dave, hi, you're part of the Davette, or
no,
whatever.
No, I'm not part of that, Greg.
Oh, okay, all right.
That caller, the guy who's been accused of being annoying?
Yes.
I think the word's contingent with a T, not a D.
Did he say contingent?
Yes.
Contingent.
Yeah, that's what he thinks the word is.
Contingent.
Contingent. Well.
Hey, Greg, do you take music requests?
Yeah.
I wonder if you have any Tony O'Kay.
No, I don't have any of that.
They're from the 70s. They're a rock band from the 70s, I think. Tony O'Kay.
Okay. I'll try and find it.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Well, what was Dave's point there?
I don't know. I have no idea. I
just want to say, Greg, that Mae Brussel did a lot of research in the Disney Corporation and talked about the Nazi, you know, the Reinhard Gehlen network took over the Disney Corporation. So it may not have been Disney who's Nazi-aligned. It's after he died.
That's very possible. But anyway, this quote was sent to me, and I thought it was a really interesting quote. And I have whole books of Disney quotes. He seemed to be just sit around writing things out. But I guess he was recorded so much, they transcribed... meetings at the studio that he would have had with animators and so on. So I guess you're bound to have some interesting quotations emanate from that. But here it is. Leadership means that a group, large or small, is willing to entrust authority to a person who has shown judgment, wisdom, personal appeal, and proven competence. So that was the Wikipedia quote of the day on December 5th. Now, December 5th is also the birth date of my father, my late father. So every year when that date comes up, I think of my father, and I also think of Walt Disney. And so I thought I'd go and get some quotes of Disney, and because I think he's a very interesting person, and he was very right wing in terms of his politics, conservative, I suppose. But the obverse of this, as you'll hear in some of these quotes, is that he created an artistic franchise, something that really affected the, even though he was an entertainer as such, a mass entertainer, as he admits to being, he never admitted to being an artist, but he really took art in a whole new direction on so many fronts, and was really extremely influential in the 20th century and beyond. So here are some quotes from Walt Disney. "Don't tell me about the problems. I make the problems. I just make what I like, warm and human stories, ones about historic characters and events, and about animals. If there is a secret, I guess it's that I never make the pictures too childish, but always try to get in a little satire of adult foibles." Here's another quote from Walt Disney. "If anybody gets highbrow around the studio, out he goes." "In this volatile business of ours, we can ill afford to rest on our laurels, even to pause in retrospect. Times and conditions change so rapidly that we must keep our aim constantly focused on the future." I thought that one was interesting because I'll relate this to my work here at the station. You'll hear a lot of people saying, if we could only get back to the way CKLN used to be. Or they'll say, you know, when things were good. And I go, well, when were things good? And they can never tell me. and even I do that. You know, I say, hey, it was good when Bob had his show with Mike Dyer. That was good. You know, or the international connection when Bob was doing. And but Disney's right. You can't look back and say, okay, we're going to go back to that era. You've got to always be looking forward and doing new things. And on that note, he said, "I can never stand still. I must explore and experiment. I am never satisfied with my work. I resent the limitations of my own imagination." How many of us have thought that, but not put it down and had it been quoted for it? He said, "I do not want to make teaching films. If I did, I would create a separate organization. It is not higher education that interests me so much as general mass education." I guess that's why people maybe compare him to Hitler. "I have never been interested in personal gain or profit. This business and this studio have been my entire life. The victories must not be too easy. Strife to test valor is still and will always be the basic ingredient of the animated tale, as of all screen entertainments." Again, these are the quotes of Disney. Here's one of the most interesting ones, I thought. "People look at me in many ways. They've said, the guy has no regard for money. That is not true. I have had regard for money. It depends on who's saying that. Some people worship money as something you've got to have piled up in a big pile somewhere. I've only thought about money in one way, and that is to do something with it. I don't think there's a thing I own that I will ever get the benefit of except through doing things with it. I don't ever want the dividends. I don't even want the dividends from the stock in the studio because the government's going to take it away. I'd rather have that in the company, working." He also said, "Direct and easy communications, freedom of speech in all forms and in its broadest sense, has become vital to the very survival of a civilized humanity." Right, Bob?
Do you agree? No, that's not right.
You don't agree with that?
No, because the kind of media that he created, they're post-verbal. And to rely on freedom of speech and limit it to the verbal is a reason why you'll end up being called a Nazi or a fascist. He doesn't seem to have any interest in the effects of what he's doing. He's way
way bigger than MKUltra or anything that Wayne Morris talked about. This guy, there are psychiatrists today who deal with patients who have archetypes, not the Jungian archetypes. They have Disney archetypes in their minds.
True.
When they dream.
Yeah.
This guy has, he's the beginning of the Matrix.
Of all the things I've done, the most vital is coordinating the talents of those who work for us and pointing them toward a certain goal. Walt Disney, again.
McLuhan used to say that the archetypal American bias, it was kinetic and manipulatory. He is this. He's the efficient causality. He wants to move forward, always being busy, 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 creating environments that give great pleasures and ecstasies to people, but he doesn't care about the fact that he's altering the mind. He thinks he can operate in a vacuum and do what he wants to do and just entertain people. That's an illusion to think he's just entertaining.
He says, a good ending is vital to a picture, the single most important element, because it is what the audience takes with them out of the theater. And then he says, there's nothing wrong with good schmaltz, nothing wrong with good heart. The critics think I'm kind of corny. Well, I am corny. As long as people respond to it, I'm okay.
Ah, there it is. As long as people respond. I don't think the critics had the right language in dealing with him. I think he wins the argument with the critics, but both of them are ignoring what James Joyce and Finnegan's Wake started to explore. You know, Disney is a big factor in Finnegan's Wake. People don't know that, but...
Why?
We do it.
You do?
Well, but Joyce said that he was writing a cartoon book, a comic book. What do you think of that, Greg? I mean, that's your medium, comics, and... Mm-hmm. You didn't know that Joyce was on your side.
No.
I want to add a personal note here. You say that he was born on your father's birthday.
Yes.
Well, Disney was founded on Dave Neufeld, the great Canadian composer, on his birthday, October 16th.
What do you mean it was founded?
Brothers Walt and Roy Disney started the animation studio on October 16th, 1923.
Too bad it wasn't 22.
They probably would. This is Wiki. Wiki is the 23 gang,
Oh, I see. Whatever we accomplish is due to a combined effort. The organization must be with you or you don't get it done. In my organization, there is respect for every individual, and we all have a keen respect for the public. Here's what he said about the school that Disney funded, really. It's called CalArts, and it's still... It still funds this school to a great extent. He said, we've got to fight against bigness. If a school gets too large, you lose an intimacy with the students. They begin to feel they're just part of a big complex. I don't think you can create too well in a big plant. That's why I always try to avoid bigness in the studio.
And he became the biggest environment, virtually and whatever. There's a disconnect here. He doesn't see the effects of what he's doing.
No,
What do you mean? He's Mr. Big, where his corporation is once the Reinhard Galen Network took it over.
Well, I think that Disney, although it was a large studio at one point, it had something like 2,000 people working at it in the 40s when they were really, or in the late 30s, early 40s, when they were pushing out all those features like Bambi and Snow White and Pinocchio and really
Fantasia,
some of the greatest films that have ever been made. Certainly in animation, and maybe in of all time. And he had a huge studio, but I worked with a lot of people that that worked directly with Disney, and it was always startling to me when you would speak with them, and they'd be an animator or an assistant animator or whatever they'd be doing at the studio, they seemed to know Walt Disney. They'd see him. He'd be there all the time. He'd be walking through. He'd be commenting. He'd be open and available. It wasn't like some guy sitting up in an ivory tower somewhere. People would be coming in on the weekend, and they'd wander around. They'd bring a relative in and show them the studio, and they'd walk into a building, and someone would call out, who's there? And... someone would say, oh, it's me, and then Walt Disney would pop out. He says, oh, I'm just here checking up on something or other. You know, and then if you worked late, one of the guys I worked with, Art Babbitt, who was one of the top animators at the studio, would say that Walt Disney would always come through the studio. I would see him always at night. And when it says, when Walt Disney said that if anybody got highbrow around the studio, well... Well, Art Babbitt was always considered to be highbrow. He's talking about music and art. And one day, evidently, Walt Disney came in, and he was serious. And he came in and said to Art, "You know, Art, I think you're right about this classical music." He says, "You know, like Mozart and Beethoven." And Art Babbitt said, "That's exactly the way he said it. Beethoven." Art Babbitt always tried to be saying that Walt Disney was, a non-intellect, someone who had no real learned knowledge, wasn't really trying to do things. In fact, Art Babbitt...
He was not literate, Greg.
Yeah,
not literate.
Art Babbitt went and took piano lessons. And Art Babbitt basically, I won't use the word on the air, but... Walt Disney accused him of homosexuality for learning how to play piano. So it's, but a lot of the people that I knew, because most of them are, they work with Disney, most of them are dead now, if not all of them. They, even if they loved him or hated him, whatever range they were in there, the people that worked at the studio or knew him. And there was that range, people who just thought that he was a genius and that they wouldn't have been as good in their given craft if it had not been for him.
And for his advice.
For his advice, for the studio that he set up to create this great work, just that he had the courage to, as we'll get into just a bit later here, that he just seemed to... have an instinct on so many levels, not only about what would touch an audience. There have been many stories about how he, or actually they don't talk about this in the Disney books. There's some material that you'd never read in any Disney publication because a lot of it is geared towards creating the image of Walt Disney, as probably some of these quotes are too. But one of the most fascinating stories that I think I ever read about Walt Disney was about the blacklist in the 50s. And Disney was an anti-communist. He gave testimony at the House Un-American Activities Committee. He said that some of the people who had been at his studio, he said they were communists. One of them, I think, was a guy named P.D. Eastman, who eventually went to work for Dr. Seuss on... books. Some of your children or you as children have probably read P.D. Eastman's books. And I think this person, Phil Eastman, was accused or fingered by Walt Disney as being a communist during the during those committee hearings in the late 40s and was blacklisted for many, many years. Art Babbitt, on the other hand, who came out and struck against Disney, led the strike in 1941 against Disney, he did not call him a communist, which was interesting. Again, I knew Art Babbitt, and I don't remember him ever saying he was, but I knew he was very left-leaning. Disney, he created an environment for many, many artists to work, the top artists, and collaborated with Leopold Stokowski, Stravinsky, Picasso, Salvador Dali, not Picasso, collaborated with many of the great artists of his time and was respected, and people would make pilgrimages to this studio because they felt that it was really on the leading edge of art. In the 20th century.
Is it well known that his father was a Canadian?
Not really. There I remember pulling a clip out of a newspaper from in the early 70s where sort of a Ripley's Believe It or Not saying, "Did you know Walt Disney was born in Canada?" Well, he wasn't, but indeed his father was. So
from Huron County in Ontario.
Mm-hmm. I know
a lot of great developments in the 20th century came from Canadians.
Yeah.
Not really hyped by the Canadian government too much. I mean, major stuff.
So here he talks about his stockholders. I know different ways of looking at things. I have my stockholders, and I feel a very keen responsibility to the shareholders. But I feel that the main responsibility I have to them is to have the stock appreciate. And you only have it appreciate by reinvesting as much as you can back into the business. And that's what we've done. And that has been my philosophy on running the business. So... He always wanted to be pushing money back into the operation, and frankly, I guess he had to. He was doing some of the most risky things in the entertainment business of really anybody that that I can think of.
That's why it's appropriate you start off with the Ryerson playing of Zappa in 1971, because Disney was like Zappa. Zappa was like Disney,
mm-hmm.
very independent. I mean, they used to call Zappa right wing, but pushed the business, pushed his creativity, and always put it back into his work, any
yeah.
money he made.
We grew to our present size almost against ourselves. It was not a deliberately planned commercial venture in the sense that I sat down and said that we were going to make ourselves into a huge financial octopus. We evolved by necessity. We did not sit down and say to ourselves, how can we make a big pile of dough? It just happened. I wanted to retain my individuality. I was afraid of being hampered by studio policies. I knew if someone else got control, I would be restrained.
And that's right. Who do you think he thought his community was? Did he think in terms of my community?
I don't know. I don't think so. He says, you reach a point where you don't work for money. And then
That's right. He's created an environment, like McLuhan said, that people need. He's actually created a new body, a new organ.
Childishness? I think it's the equivalent of never losing your sense of humor. I mean, there's a certain something that you retain. It's the equivalent of not getting so stuffy that you can't laugh at others. See, the politically correct, they would have a world where you don't actually find humor with other people's foibles. Right?
Exactly. That's the people complaining about me. I'm obviously a humorous person.
No matter what the provocation, I never fire a man who is honestly trying to deliver a job. Few workers who become established at the Disney studio ever leave voluntarily or otherwise, and many have been on the payroll all their working lives. Then he said, Walt Disney again, I knew if this business was ever to get anywhere, if this business was ever to grow, it could never do it by having to answer to someone unsympathetic to its possibilities, by having to answer to someone with only one thought or interest, namely profits. For my idea of how to make profits has differed greatly from those who generally control businesses such as ours. I have blind faith in the policy that quality, tempered with good judgment and showmanship, will win against all odds. You know, the only way I've found to make these pictures is with animators. You can't seem to do it with accountants and bookkeepers. I've always been bored with just making money. I've wanted to do things. I've wanted to build things, to get something going. There's that perpetual motion machine you were talking about.
Yeah, kinetic space.
And here's my last quote today from the great Walt Disney. A man, obviously, I have many disagreements with politically, but even in his speaking about business, the idea of shoving the money, the profits, all back into it and keep going and going and going. I mean, that's essentially what would happen in a socialist state. I mean, Disney really was running his own operation. Ultimately, when he, although he never saw it to fruition because of his death, but Disney World, if you go there, is this or was, I think it changed a lot when Eisner and Katzenberg and all of these people, these perverse people, took over. But he created his own country there, his
yeah.
own Luxembourg or whatever it was. You could go
Vatican
up to
Vatican State. Yeah,
you,
Vatican State.
Yeah, you could go up to the top of this hotel at Disney World and look out over huge tracts of land and see nothing, just what he had built and trees. And you were in the meanwhile, you were in a, you know, you were near a city, but you couldn't see it because it was so deep inside of the property at the time when I was there, 1985. I mean,
Anaheim?
No, in that one he was unhappy with because he said he didn't buy enough land to have the signs, the hotels of other people, other companies, and so on, the intrusions upon the people going to the park. He always regretted that he didn't buy more land there to create a buffer around Disneyland. But when he did the Florida park, he wanted to buy vast amounts of land to keep the world at bay, really. to...
Well, Greg, how did you end up at... where were you in L.A.? Where did you work for him? What?
Well, I didn't work for Disney.
Oh, who? What?
I worked
for... You met these people, though.
Well, when I worked in... when I was 17 years old, I went to work in England, and I worked for a man named...
You were scouted, right?
I guess so. I mean, I made myself... I guess I made myself... these people were aware of my existence, and
How did they become aware of it?
That's a really complicated story. But I guess as a child, I was just really, really interested in animated cartoons and of all types. And I started making my own films, and
Did the British people find out about?
Well, I would write to the people who I really admired, and I'd find their address. I'd go to the library. I'd write to them and try and, I don't know, I just wanted to tell them that I liked what they did, and I had to tell them that I wanted to be an animator. And,
well, who was in England that you were interested in?
Actually, the letter that got me the job in England was actually one that I sent to California. And so it was all very convoluted, and... Richard Williams was in California, and he was visiting a friend and a Canadian that he'd gone to art school with at the Ontario College of Art here in Toronto. And it just so happened that I'd written to his Canadian friend's boss, who was a famous Warner Brothers animator. And this famous Warner Brothers animator had handed this letter of a child to this Canadian guy, because he said, oh, well, this kid from Canada wrote me. You're from Canada here, as if we, you know, I don't know.
You deal with it.
You deal with it. And so we carried on a communication, and I would tell him what I was doing, and we would just write back and forth. He'd send me news about what was happening in Los Angeles and so on. And then one day I got a letter from this man, Richard Williams, who I'd heard of, and basically he offered me a job.
In England?
Yeah.
What did your parents think of this?
My father was okay with it because he knew it was a tremendous opportunity, because what Richard Williams was talking about was that I had the ability to work with famous people, that these people were going to come over and teach us how to do animation. And Art Babbitt was this famous Disney guy who'd animated the Little Mushrooms in Fantasia, and Ken Harris was an animator with Chuck Jones at Warner Brothers and had done The Roadrunner and Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck, and they were all in their 60s and 70s, and Grim Natwick, who had animated Snow White, he was in his 80s, and they were going to come over and teach people things, because the whole sort of the process of animation was in disrepair. People hadn't been trained in ages, and all these older men were dying, and they were mainly men that were animators. There were a few women. But these older people were dying, and Richard Williams wanted to resurrect doing animation, and he was doing so in England, and he was well thought of. So he would bring over these famous animators, and they'd be working on a project of his over there.
And in Toronto?
In London, England.
No, so, but you said he was coming over to teach you guys.
No. He in England, Richard Williams was bringing these old animators over from California to London, and they were teaching his studio, and they were engaging in actual month long courses for the whole staff.
And he thought you could work with these guys.
They needed people. People weren't interested in animation. Young people, it wasn't something young people wanted to do, because it looked like something that would be dead, that was dying, and I guess there were no schools for it or anything. The industry really trained its own, and then when the industry fell into disrepair, it just used the people it had and didn't find anybody else. So
that's partly why you got picked up. You were a freak. You were someone who actually could do it and believed in that old art.
Yeah, I was a freak. Yeah, I liked that kind of thing. So Richard Williams gave me a gigantic opportunity, and I got to meet these people and work with them, and then subsequently I met other people, eventually I was in California and worked for Chuck Jones, the Warner Brothers cartoon director, and
but I get a sense that you were, you know, it's like a genius, some kid He gets picked up by, like Gerd Stern, his son got picked up by intelligence agencies supposedly because he's a really good computer hacker in the 80s, and he disappeared, but he eventually made Photoshop. No one at the Art College of Ontario knew about you, and you weren't connected to that intellectual highbrow world or anything, or the art world. You were off in your own little world.
Yeah.
And no one knew that they had created, the Canadian government did not know they'd made this Canadian young talent.
No.
And is that why you became a socialist? Are you alienated from where you came from?
No.
Were you a socialist at 18?
Yeah.
A communist?
Yeah.
You were?
Yeah.
Why did that? What?
Well, I guess it's part of it is your upbringing. I mean, what you're exposed
to. Oh, NDP parents, right?
Yeah.
You're just a product of your home.
Yeah.
You never actually got out of the box.
No, I never got out of the box. It's like a religion. It's like being raised Catholic.
What?
It's like being raised Catholic, Bob.
Yeah, that's interesting. But that's a big chunk of the Canadian psyche.
What?
Being
socialism?
A Bolshevik, being a communist. It's part of the Canadian tradition. We're a socialist country.
Well, Bob, I'm late for commercials, so I'm going to go to that right now.
Yeah, we have an exciting announcement.
The announcement you've been waiting for.
That is baloney. That is baloney.
That's baloney. That's bull.
What was the big lie?
The blunt fact is that every single person is going to be affected by this program. Some of you will be affected more directly, but all of you will be affected indirectly by this program.
Make sure that materials that could cause great harm aren't proliferated. Thought that was a constructive suggestion.
Made in Germany. You know the Germans always make good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Have a service or product you want the public to know about?
Then advertise with CKLN 88.1 FM. Call sales at 416-979-5251, extension 2373.
Our diverse multicultural music and spoken word programming is streamed and broadcast 24/7 to the GTA and is heard throughout Southern Ontario on Rogers 947.
We can be heard on the web at www.ckln.fm.
Contact our sales office weekdays, Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Or drop in at 55 Gould Street at Church, second floor in the Ryerson Student Campus Center.
To advertise your product or service with CKLN, email advertising@ckln.fm.
Or call sales at 416-979-5251, extension 2373.
CKLN, celebrating 25 years of independent radio.
The views expressed